Blog Talk Radio.
It's 10 o'clock. It's Monday night. It's time for Graphic Policy Radio. I'm your host, Brett, and with me is Alana. How you doing?
Hello.
And we've got a special guest with us tonight. We've been talking about it for weeks, and we got it all settled. With us is Ryan North, the writer of Adventure Time, which is produced by Boom Studios imprint Kaboom. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And, you know, we're going to chat Adventure Time and comic books, and it's very cool for you to join us. We really appreciate you hanging out and chatting.
Sure.
So I think the first thing I'd like to ask is just kind of give us a history of, like, how you got into comics for those listening.
How I got into comics, gosh. Actually, I remember it was my first job with my first paycheck from my first job. I walked into the comic book store, and I was like, I'm a employed man. Now I can afford to buy things I like, and I like comics. And so I basically picked comics based on the covers that I liked. And I happened to pick up Dark Knight Returns. It was a really good choice. And some Alex Ross comics, Peace on Earth. And they're both really good. And I was like, man, comics. I do like comics. I'm glad I bought some.
So from going to read them, like, how did you actually get to where you are now as far as writing? Especially Adventure Time, because that's a huge property, popular series.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing a webcomic called Dinosaur Comics for the past, and we just had our 10-year anniversary. I say our, it's me. I just had my 10-year anniversary with Dinosaur Comics. And I guess you could look at that as sort of this online almost resume that shows, A, I know how to put a sentence together, I guess, and B, I can meet a deadline. So the story is, I got an email from Shannon, my editor, saying, hey, we're doing this Adventure Time comic. We'd love to have you write it. And I wrote back and said, yes. And it was simple as that.
Did you know Adventure Time beforehand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't have taken the job if I didn't. It would be terrible. I mean, the thing with any fandom is that they know it really well. And if you're not one of them, and you're there doing some sort of work with it, and you get it wrong, I mean, you're betraying the audience, right? It's like watching a Star Trek episode, and they beam through the shields. It's impossible. Everyone knows you don't beam through shields. So I wouldn't have taken the job if I wasn't already a huge fan of Adventure Time and love the show.
How did you first come on, discover the Adventure Time cartoon, and what was your initial reaction to it?
Oh, it was actually 5 or 6 years ago with the short Penn did on YouTube, the pilot episode. I remember my friend Keen emailed me that, and I was like, this is amazing. And I linked to it, and it was really good. And then, you know, 5 years later, it's a TV show that was also really good, in fact, better. So it's been sort of around for, you know, a long time.
So when... So it's a comic book series, and it's also, you know, a popular television series. When it comes to, you know, working between the two, I mean, is there a lot of, do you talk to the folks at the animation end a lot? Do they talk to you? Or is it more of like, you know, have fun with the comic and do your own thing and just make it entertaining?
Yeah. When we started, Penn and I had a few conversations about this. We were like, what is this comic going to be? And is it going to be set in the same continuity? And how do we want it to work and stuff like that? And there's been a few pages where I get into sort of the history, the lore of the show, where Penn and I will go back, Penn, the creator of Adventure Time, Pendleton Ward, and I will go back and sort of have a conversation, say, can we do this? What if we did this? It's funny because there's a page with Marceline at the end of issue 4, just the one page we'll see in her as a little girl, and we did, I think it was 11 drafts of that page to get it right. And I would have an idea, and then Penn would say, well, I love it. And then you come back 2 days later and say, you know what, we're going to be doing this thing 2 seasons down the road. We haven't announced yet, and this would conflict with that. So let's change it a bit. So it's fun, and it's great to know sort of all these secrets that aren't public yet and where the show's going to be going. But it's also nice to be able to do your own thing sometimes. And I've never really had any feedback saying, you can't do this, which is great. It let me go nuts.
that's pretty like nice to have and be able to just, you don't have to worry about it for the most part, and you know, you can go crazy, do what you want, and just have fun with the property.
Yeah, I was worried initially because I'm like, well, this has to go through my editor, and has to go through Penn, has to go through Cartoon Network. But they're all like, yeah, this is great. Keep doing it. Ship it.
But there's more than one Adventure Time comic, and I'm not going to go into all that because you write the main one. But, I mean, how much as far as talk between all the people involved with all of those as far as, you know, what everyone's doing?
Right. The woman who did the spin-off comic Marcy and the Scream Queens, Meredith Grand, is a friend of mine. So when she started, we had some chats, and it was sort of nice to see where she was going with it. And the only real thing that happened with that was when she was doing that arc with Marceline, I just didn't put Marceline in the comic, so she wouldn't be in two places at once. And the other spinoff, Fiona and Cake, the gender swap universe, it's an alternate universe, so there's no worry about conflict there. So it's easy.
Nice and simple.
Yeah.
I've been to a whole bunch of conventions, and I'm clear that Adventure Time is a huge hit for Boom. What's it like actually meeting the fans out at conventions? I mean, I know that for a lot of times they're capping lines because the reaction's so crazy that they just need to. So what's it for you like out actually meeting the fans?
Oh, it's great. I mean, you're sitting there and it's just nonstop parade of people coming up saying they like your work and by extension you. Like, it's a very, very easy thing to sit and enjoy. And it's also nice seeing the variety of fans. Like, I've had people reading the book who are 60 years old. I've had 6-year-olds come up. Usually they're both in costumes, which is awesome. And they're usually really good costumes, which is also impressive. I've seen some really amazing BMO costumes that I kind of wanted to steal. But yeah, it's gratifying, and it's great to see like any work having such an impact with people is the best thing you can hope for, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's one of the most interesting things any of the children who you've spoken with have said to you about the comic or about their reactions to it?
One I'm thinking of, I was at a show in Toronto, and these kids must have been, 6 or 7, and they came up and they were getting their book signed, and I've learned to draw a Finn and Jake, because I can't really draw that well, but I can draw Finn and Jake if I'm put on the spot now. And they were asking me about, what happened after this episode, and I was like, I don't know what happened after this episode. And they're like, here's what I think happened after this episode. And I got this adorable fan theory of what happened after one of these episodes, and it was super cute. And, I mean, at that age, I think, at least with these kids, the distinction between the show and the comic wasn't really there. And they're all sort of part of the same universe, which is fantastic. And I didn't want them to be like, well, actually, there's a distinction between the show and the comic. And while I write the comic, I don't write the show, blah, blah, blah. I was just like, no, let's talk about fan theories about the comic and about the show and see what we think happened after the episode ended. It was a lot of fun and, super adorable.
That was fantastic. That's like just the reaction I imagine you'd want to hear from the 6-year-olds. My theory is blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Folks who are listening, if people are listening, you can call in at 619-768-2952. We're taking callers, and you can talk to Ryan yourself and ask questions, and hopefully get some folks. Question I have about it, because I'm relatively new. I actually came from Bravest Warriors first, and then Alana talked so much about Adventure Time. I and Philip with Boom talked so much about it. I felt like I kind of needed to check it out. The thing that really caught me was it's great for kids, but there's also a lot of jokes for adults that might go over kids' heads. I have no idea. What's it like kind of writing that sort of, I would say, dual joke in a way? Find it point where you like write a joke and be like, it's, only adults are going to get that. I need to get rid of it. Or, this is maybe too lowbrow for kids or not smart enough for kids.
Right. Yeah, I've talked about this with Joey Kimo, who writes the Bravest Warriors comic, and we're pals. And, I think our shared sentiment towards this is that there's a pretty important distinction between something that's written for children and something that's written for all ages. And if you're writing for children, you're sort of aiming it at this imagined youth that you're going to, you know, scale things for, talk down towards, this is for kids. And if you're writing all ages, you want a 6-year-old to enjoy it, but also a 60-year-old or a 30-year-old or anyone, all ages, I guess, is what it's supposed to be. And so really when you're doing that, it's just a matter for me of writing like I do all writing. If I'm writing comedy, I'm writing to make myself laugh. So I'm trying to amuse a 32-year-old, I think I am, 32. And just make sure it's all ages. You make sure everyone keeps their clothes on and nobody swears too much. You're kind of there. I mean, I remember as a child, you could tell when books were like baby books. They're too young for you. They're talking down, and that's not really respectful. So I treat kids like, when it comes to fiction, I treat them like little adults and don't expect them to be dumb.
Yeah, in the last episode, we had Jeremy Whitley, who does Princeless, and it kind of seems like a lot of what he was saying, too, was that, you write to write, you know, if you try to dumb it down, you're kind of insulting kids in a way. So you can write smart for everyone, and the kids get it. Kids are a lot brighter than, you know, folks give them credit for, and they get the jokes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather say I write a comic for smart kids than stupid kids.
I've heard, and I'm very tired of it, like people claiming that, like, well, it's really for adults anyway, and like kids don't really watch it. Now, look, I don't know a ton of children, but I know children who watch the show, and you interact with kid fans all the time. Do they have a different relationship with the characters than, you know, because they're also sort of functioning in more of an imaginative state themselves?
I don't think so. I mean, I think what appeals about the show and the world of Adventure Time is that it's this sort of playground where anything can happen, and there's consequences to the actions. So there's this one episode I love where they want to save this dead plant from the dead world. So they effectively go into the afterlife to save this plant. And to do that, Herman Butler's like, yeah, I can get you there, but there'll be a price. And they're like, yeah, whatever, we don't care about the price. And the episode ends with Herman Butler saying, all right, you succeeded in your mission. I need my price now. I'm going to steal your skin. And the episode ends. And you're like, what? that's the conclusion? That's how we ended this? But there's consequences. And I feel like that sort of is appealing to a viewer, where you're used to cartoons having a reset every episode where things go back to the way they were, and, you know, nothing really matters and everything's fine and safe. It's like a padded cell almost. But Adventure Time, you know, things change over time and actions have consequences. I think that's a lot of the appeal of what the show has. And I feel like that, like, kids and adults both pick up on that. I think that's what the appeal is for both of them.
What was it about this show that, like, really drove or spoke to you? I mean, you said you were a fan of it before you started writing. Like, what was it that caught your interest?
I think it would be that sense of consequence, with also a sense of, I was going to say fearlessness, but I feel like that's pretty synonymous for adventure. Like, there's a sense of adventure to the show where they're exploring. And it's pretty facile to be like, yeah, I like the adventure of Adventure Time. I also like the time parts of it. But I think what attracts me is the sense of adventure, and also the characters, especially Finn and Jake, who have this relationship that's friendly, but also this kind of brotherly love they share. It's really nice, and like a super solid relationship at the center of the show really helps the adventures go off in all these crazy directions. You know, they're going to make it home in pretty good shape because Finn and Jake care so much for each other and the people around them.
One of the things that I think is truly the most radical about the show is that you have two male protagonists who both have emotions in a deep way, and they get sad and they get hurt and they get happy and they are afraid of things. And you don't have, I watch a lot of children's cartoons. I don't read a ton of children's comics or all ages comics, to be honest, but you don't have, there aren't really a ton of examples I can think of, you know, in popular culture where male characters are really given the space to express themselves in those ways. And that's really one of the things that has most impressed me about the series, and that is one of the reasons why I endorse it so highly to parents who I know.
Yeah, and the flip side of that is a lot of the female characters are competent and not,
yes,
you know, window dressing or people to be rescued all the time. What I love is you have this sort of structure where the Ice King goes and kidnaps a princess and Finn and Jake save her, which is a very classic sort of male-dominated storyline where the princess is an object that gets saved and returned to where she should be. But what happens a lot is that the Ice King isn't really that great at kidnapping princesses, and he's also got his own kind of emotional baggage he brings to the table, and the princesses have their own powers and abilities, and it sort of subverts a lot of what you expect from the standard sort of classic in the old sense narrative.
Definitely. I mean, when the show actually gave, and you guys are definitely continuing this in the comics, it actually gave, you know, Lumpy Spain's princess real pathos. Like, that was really brilliant and subversive, because it's so easy to have characters that you just sort of laugh at and dismiss, and to give this character who, like, you do laugh at and does say ridiculous things, but, like, to actually also feel for her, you know, was amazing. And I love what you did in the issue 12, where she got sent into the video game and has a relationship with a imaginary glove in her own mind. that is so subversive and interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I feel like a lot of the characters have this depth to them where it's kind of expect not be space princess to, you know, get in a fight with her parents and then move out and basically be a homeless person. Because she's really good at being an adult. And it's the relationship between Isaac and Marceline has incredible depth that you wouldn't expect looking at that pilot 5 years ago. But everyone working on the show, I feel like, is put in a position where they can contribute things and they all want to make it the best show it can be. So you end up with this depth that wouldn't normally be there, I think.
So the 13th issue came out last week. How far out do you have it planned?
I today finished writing issue 16, I think we're on. So 3 or 4 issues ahead. We normally do 4-issue arcs and then a standalone issue where I get to do something new. And the last standalone, issue 10, was the Choose Your Own Adventure Time issue, where it was this nonlinear branching narrative that was tons of fun to write, and I ended up sketching it on pieces of paper, like empty panels with just words written in, and then a separate script where the words are written better and more clearly. It was, you know, tons of fun to write, and I love that they give me the freedom to sort of experiment and do these crazy things that you wouldn't normally see in an all-ages comic book. But again, it comes back to trusting the reader, respecting the reader, assuming the reader is not dumb. And giving them something that's fun, you know?
One of the things that stood out was, you know, as much as they use language that we do every day, there's all these, like, quirky sayings that go throughout the series. Is there, like, a handbook as to how to use some of these phrases?
You know, I started writing the comic. I was like, hey, guys, do you have a Bible for the show or something? And they were like, no. We did, but we never updated it, so just watch the show, which is fine. That's what I do anyway. So, yeah, it's sort of they have their own language, but you sort of see where it's going, how it comes from, and jump into that really easily. I find anyway. It's lots of fun. I mean, the slang is terrific.
And, yeah, when it comes to slang, is there any point where it's something you've written and then someone's looked at it and be like, nah, you know, I don't think they would say math here or mathematical here or something? And then, like, you know, maybe do this instead?
It hasn't happened, no. But, I mean, I try to use it sparingly, right? I don't have to say math every second panel.
As far as there's going to be the all math thing. It'll be like Smurfs.
Oh, God.
So you've got 16 plotted out, 13 have been released. Has there been plots and stories that, you know, you wrote and someone was just like, no, this is even too out there for this comic?
Yeah, no, that hasn't happened. I mean, this is what is so fun about working on the comic, is that I've, up to now, tried to think of the craziest things I can do, and I keep getting back yeses. So it's, you know, super liberating and lots of fun.
What's generally, like, the process to actually create? I mean, for folks who might not know the actual creation process, like, take us through an issue as to exactly how it kind of puts together, what input you have, you know, what goes to editors, artists, stuff like that.
Right. Well, one of the things the show does, which I thought I wanted to sort of copy and, I won't say copy, liberate to the comic, is the storyboard artists, those who lay out the visual elements of the cartoon, work with the writers and add their own ideas to the story as they go. It's more of a collaboration than what it normally is, which is I write this, you draw it, and we're done. Which of the comic, I wanted the same thing, where I'll write a script, and I'll say to the artist, Braden Shelley, you know, see something you don't like, or something you want to change, or you have some better idea, let's throw it in, email if it's something to use. Like, we'll work together to make this the best comic we can. So the process is basically, I sit down, and I write the comics, and the first issue, I wrote, I wrote really detailed scene descriptions, or panel layouts, rather, where I'd say, in this panel, this is happening, and the next panel, which will be to the left, this is happening, and the third panel will be a double height layout, like I was really describing what it looked like on the page. And then I got back the pencils for that first issue, and the artist had completely ignored what I'd written, and it was way better. And when I'd written down, I was like, this is great. Like, this is exactly what I wanted. And so now I still write the scene descriptions so I know what's happening in the comic and who's saying what. But the panel layout, I'll just say, there's six panels on this page most of the time. Unless there's something special going on, I'll just say, there's six panels, there's five panels, there's seven panels, and leave it completely up to them. Because they're the ones who have been drawing, you know, for 20, 30 years. They've got the experience in visual layout of comics and that sort of storytelling. And I'd much rather they, you know, show off those talents and have me being like, no, I'm the writer, I got this, and then put something there that's not quite as good. So it's collaborative, and they'll send, I send in the script, and then they'll send back notes being like, oh, what if we did this differently? Or normally, actually, it's, we did this differently, just so you know. And it's always been a stronger book because of it. And the nice thing is, people are like, wow, this is a good comic. Ryan deserves a lot of credit for that. They don't give the artist the credit they should get, so it's nice from an ego point of view, I guess, to steal all that credit for myself.
How did you come up with the idea for the secret text at the bottom of those pages?
That was actually, I on my comic, I have a hidden text where if you hover the mouse over dinosaur comics, you get a sort of an extra punchline at the end, hidden alt text. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to bring that to the comic, and so I just wrote it in saying, guys, this is what we're going to do. We're going to print this at the bottom of each page. And it's funny because my editor, Shannon, loved the idea, and her editor above her hated the idea. And so for the first issue, the compromise they worked out was half of the alts would appear. And in case it was just this disastrous idea, they would just cut them out after that. And everyone loved them. They're like, oh, there's these actual jokes at the bottom of some of the pages. And so since then, it's been really easy to put them in and hasn't been an issue at all. But it was funny how close they were to not going in there, and then we just ran with it.
You know, one additional motivation people should have to be reading these comics in print, because I also get review copies on digital now, those comments are impossible to read on my computer. I can only read them when I'm looking at the comics in print. So let that be a lesson to everybody.
Yeah,
I also like my stories, people who have been reading the comics and then they only notice them like three issues in, they have to go back and reread them and find all the stuff they missed. Like that sort of makes the book fun, right? Surprises. The book can surprise you even after you credit.
Is there other...
I'm surprised, like, I don't have to have a secret decoder ring to understand them. That probably is on its way eventually anyhow. So
there actually have been comics where we've encrypted secret messages at the bottom. So you do need to have a decoder ring.
I don't
decoder ring. You can figure out the code yourself if you need to.
Is there other like Easter eggs thrown throughout the issues other than kind of some of the bottom stuff?
Yeah, there's one that I can't tell you about because it's also an Easter egg on the show and no one's discovered it yet.
What issue of the comic is it? Can you at least tell me what issue of the comic it's in?
Oh, it's in tons. It happens pretty often.
Oh. Oh, my. Speaking of, though, was that Dr. Princess dressed as a wizard in the wizard battle lineup?
Are you asking Ryan, the guy who wrote the comic, or Ryan, the guy who has secret insider knowledge?
Oh, I'm asking guy who wrote the comic.
Yes, I don't know.
Totally what? I thought it was her. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Cool. She's science wizard. That's her secret identity.
Yeah.
I had a question. I just totally blanked on it. No.
Well, the answer
probably
to it,
the concept of science wizard was too confusing. you've been doing a lot of fun stuff with 8-bit video game visuals in the comics. Have you had a chance to sort of hear how, like, folks who are not of our generation, like, or and older, like, how the kids interpret that sort of stuff? Like, are they familiar with that visual style, or does it just seem like an alien thing to them?
Yeah, it's interesting, because, I mean, when you show something that's sort of pixely and low-res, we all think, oh, that looks like maybe a Super Nintendo game or Nintendo game. We put it in a certain time period. And, you know, the super hardcore fans be like, oh, well, the color depth there is limited to 16 colors. It's clearly an 8-bit console we're looking at. Well, this has a 32-bit color depth, so it's going to be around, you know, 1993. But from what I've seen of, you know, kids who weren't alive then, who are alive now and just see it as a style, it's more of an aesthetic. The same way we might look at, you know, jerky movement in black and white films as something that used to be something you had to do, and now it's something you can do as a choice if you want to, for a certain look or a certain sort of reference to that time period and the way things looked at that time. So I think it started as this is cool and look how neat this style is, but I think it's moving towards this looks like it's old. But still interesting and a cool visual look, but it's starting to be almost a shorthand for the past.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of talk of the actual series and me still being relatively new, and I'm kind of catching up on the cartoon series itself. A debate about this world. Is this fantasy land? Is this post-apocalyptic world? Do you have theories, and there's anything you can talk about when it comes to this debate as the actual what Adventure Time is?
Yeah, I think I don't think I'm giving anything away when I say that it originally was just this fantasy land that Penn Ward created, and you sort of fill in the blanks as you go. And then one of the early episodes was Business Time with these businessmen to get unfrozen, and that hinted that this was actually not some fantasy parallel Earth, but a future current Earth. And it's actually a post-apocalyptic world. And it gave that sort of depth to the premise of what hadn't been there before. And that's what you... One of the, I think, benefits of a collaborative medium, of any collaborative medium, is that people bring their own ideas to the table, and you start being surprised at how awesome some of these ideas make your idea. And it just gets better and better. So I think it's pretty established that the Adventure Time, the Land of Ooh, is a future Earth after the Mushroom Wars, which Finn is probably the human, as in the last human.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot which issue. There's like that cutaway as they're crossing crevasse, and it's got like the history all in the dirt.
Yep.
And me looking at it, I was just like, all right, so it's got to be some future time. But it was, I mean, was there, when that was created, was there thought towards that particular panel?
Yeah, basically my thought with that panel was I want with the comics to do things that you can't do on the show. Like, exploit the medium of comics, just don't make it like an episode written down, because if you wanted the episode, you can watch the episode, and the comic doesn't take away anything from the show. But I'd like to at least sometimes do things that you can't really do as well in something where you're showing 24 frames a second. And one thing comics do really well is let you linger on the panel and look and see the detail that you'd miss on a show. And so that was the idea there, was to put a lot of detail that you could look at and stare and sort of be like, oh, where's this from? This is really cool. And also, if you look closely, there's a little T-Rex hidden in that panel.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
So I tied them all together. It's fun.
Now I kind of remember the question. So it kind of ties into the digital that Alana brought up with it was kind of hard to read the bottom stuff. And you just kind of talked about it. I mean, is there things that you're doing in the comic where you know, keep in mind that I can do this here in the comic where you can't do this in the cartoon? And have you thought about like, all right, with a digital comic, I can do even this, when it comes to your writing, or like what considerations do you put in when it comes to that stuff?
Yeah, it's funny, the issue 10, the Choose Your Own Adventure Time issue, where it was all nonlinear, was something that you couldn't really do in a show, especially something like a broadcast show. It doesn't work that well. In terms of digital only, there is a digital version of the Adventure Time comic, but it's the same as the print comic, so I haven't done anything that's special for digital only, but that would be something cool to think about, to sort of, if we could somehow do a special version where, you know, secret surprising things happen, that'd be fun. I'm a big fan of mediums exploiting themselves to the maximum possible way they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, especially with comics about around this time, with kind of the explosion of the digital aspect, is it seems that artists are the ones that are really, really impacted as far as, doing this splash page or this, panel, I have to think about how it comes out digitally now. So it's kind of interesting to talk to writers to see, what they're keeping in mind, and is that hitting, in the back of their head at all while they're writing?
Yeah, I mean, it changes the experience of reading, right? I mean, superficially it does, but even at a more in-depth level, most comic viewing programs will show you panel by panel or almost beat by beat, but you don't have that experience of turning a page, getting a glimpse of what the next two-page spread looks like, and then working your way through it, which you do in print. In digital, it's more you sort of go to the next element and you have less context. And it's interesting because when you're writing a comic, you're always thinking of how this will look on the page, and if you're going to have a big surprise, you'd rather have that surprise show up when you turn the page than have it on the facing page. Because when you turn the page, you're like, oh, there's an explosion on page 3 and I'm on page 2 and I can see page 3 already. I'm not going to be surprised when something blows up. But if you put that explosion on page 4, then it is a surprise. You turn the page and go, oh, gosh, I didn't see this already. What a surprise. So it's something that you keep in mind for print, but digitally kind of get it for free because there's less context. There's less visual context when you're reading a digital comic most of the time.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Can I ask a personal? Who is your favorite of the, as they're now being called on the show, even the C-list characters on the show to write in the comic that, so whether you've had a chance to use them or not?
I really like Lemon Grab. I feel like he is lots of fun, but he's also so defined by his voice and his delivery that I haven't really used him in the comic at all because I don't want to use him and have him be not as good. And I feel like of all the characters, he's the one most defined by his voice and the way he says his lines. Doesn't mean you won't see him, but I've actually written things where I'm trying to figure out the way he speaks, how do you represent that in text? How do you get his intonations to show up in, flat two-dimensional text, playing with caps lock and punctuation and stuff? So I really like Lemon Grab, but I think he's sort of objectively awesome in that regard.
That's true, actually. I thought they did a great job of handling him in Marceline and the Scream Queens when they had the one back page story of him finding his way into a hardcore band, which is really an appropriate use for his natural screaming abilities. But you're right that it's hard to imagine a character without that voice.
Yeah.
Is there any of the characters that are harder to write just because how they're portrayed on the animated series that it's just kind of a bit difficult to get their voice? I mean, it's one example you gave, but I mean, there's some easier to write than others, or there's some that you're sitting there like, I have to really keep in mind these specific things.
Yeah, Lumpy Space Princess. Whenever I do most of my writing alone, because I find the process of writing is basically trying to make yourself laugh, and it's really uncool to laugh at your own jokes, and it's even more uncool to sit there writing your own jokes so that you can laugh at your own jokes. But for Lumpy Space Princess, I'm only trying to get myself to laugh, but I'll also be writing it and always reading her lines out loud in my impression of her voice to make sure that they read properly and sound like something she could say. So she's the only character I do that where I'll read the voice out loud, read what I've written out loud, but also do it in her voice, which is, it's sort of a special case, but her voice, again, is so distinctive, and she's so much fun. You want to make sure you get her right. You don't want to cheat with her.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. I would love to spy on that.
So do you actually do the voices while you write?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like all professional writers do that.
Is there any point where you're like, I don't quite have the dialogue down quite right, and gone to the voice actors and be like, can you just do this so I can hear it? Or someone on the series being like, I'm just not quite hitting this beat right now.
Yeah, no, I feel like I would abuse that, and I would do something like, I'm having this line where Jake says, hi, you've reached Ryan North, you can't come to the phone right now, please leave a message at the beep. Just say that real quick into this microphone.
Oh, God. Yeah. I actually didn't realize that Drew DiMaggio, I can't speak English anymore, I was a voice actor for Jake at first, and then as soon as I did realize it's such an interesting subtle difference between him and the voice he does for
Futurama.
Bender and the characters.
Yeah,
on Futurama, so different. Question actually, with the idea behind Adventure Tim, what was sort of the genius for coming up with that Adventure Tim character?
Yeah, actually, I remember exactly where I came up with that. It was at Emerald City Comic Con last year. I was hanging out with Shannon at the table, and we were just, you're joking around with friends, and I was like, all right, Shannon, here's the pitch for the next issue. Finn and Jake meet this really cool new kid called Adventure Tim. And she was like, I actually really like that. And I was like, I actually really like that, too. And so I went home and sort of cleaned up the premise a bit and made him, instead of this really cool sort of Poochie-like character, literal merging of the two, that's sort of having these weird parallel merged adventures at the same time. And it's just fun, right? It's sort of thing you can do in comics where it doesn't have to be a big deal and it doesn't have to show up in every issue, but you can just have fun with Adventure Tim one issue and see where that takes you.
Are we going to see Adventure Tim down the road? I don't watch the cartoon, so I didn't know if it was from the cartoon or if it was something from the comic.
Right.
But I was like, oh, this is actually really, really funny.
Yeah, he showed up briefly in issue 10, and he might show up again. I'm not sure yet. He's fun. I like the world he lives in, where everything's slightly different. So the Ice King, there's the Mice King. Stuff like that I find really fascinating and fun to write.
I find him slightly sad in comparison, probably because he is his own best friend.
Yeah, he's lonelier, right? Like he's one guy where they've got two guys, and I mean there is sort of this abiding sadness in a lot of Adventure Time stuff that I think makes the show so interesting. Like people aren't always happy all the time. And not that it's sad to live alone. I've lived alone, it's awesome. But there is there's some sadness. There's sadness in a lot of characters, right? People get sad sometimes. They get feelings.
Yeah. I've definitely had that emotional response to things I've read in the comics, without a doubt, one of the things that drives me crazy is when people talk about brilliant pieces of art, such as Adventure Time, and make comments like, oh, they must be high when they're doing that.
Because these things
are not very creative themselves and therefore can't imagine these things. How do you respond to that kind of awful, horrible thing that I hate people when they say it?
When someone comes up and says, hey, what were you guys smoking when you wrote this? I try to take it as like a compliment that got sort of badly expressed. Because I'm aware that when you work in a public-facing creative industry like comics or anything where people will write you and say, I like your stuff. For them, usually it's the first time they're saying this to you or maybe to anyone, but for you, it might be not be the first time you've heard this. And you don't want to be that guy who's like, yeah, whatever, I know I'm great, thanks for coming out, see you later. Like, that's rude, and it sort of ruins the experience for them. And so if their first time delivering a compliment comes out as, you know, what were you guys smoking, I translate that into, that's really creative, and I don't know how you would do this, and I just think that's really cool. I sort of rewrite what they're saying into a super nice compliment, so I can say, oh, awesome, thank you, and, you know, knock it into an argument about where creativity comes from and whether or not, you know, certain chemicals are necessary to have good ideas.
You are truly a greater man than I, but I think that that's a good way to deal with it. That is a good way to deal with it.
I feel like I kind of got to ask, has anyone actually offered you anything at a show? I mean, there's some weird stuff that goes on cons that would not shock me.
Yeah, I mean, I got boring stories. I've been offered and accepted cookies and, like, you know, nice stuff. People bake me cookies.
Aww.
That's awesome. I would eat your cookies. But no one's been like, here, I have some cocaine. Do you want to smell this cocaine with me?
Well, I was about to say, like, no one's done the, hey, man, that's awesome, let's go out and smoke a J or, you know, after the show or something like that.
I mean, this is going to make you sound like a big loser, but, you know, we do all sorts of awesome stuff, and it's all secrets.
Because you're spies. It's all good. And one other question I definitely wanted to ask. What other...
Should she get cut off, I guess?
Possibly.
Oh.
Or...
Yeah. She actually accidentally hung up.
It's going to be a really good question. She had to self-censor it.
She's IMing me, so I'm going to keep it up. So the question she was going to ask is, so you said that you started reading comics, you know, back in the day. Is there anything that you currently read now?
I've been actually really... This is going to sound self-serving because it'll be like Bravest Warriors. It's really good. But Joey usually sends me the scripts for what he's written, and we'll go back and forth and sort of help each other polish up the scripts. And I really love that leap between script and comic pencils and finished page. So I really enjoy, I get this sort of really deep satisfaction reading Bravest Warriors. So I read the script, and then I get to read the finished comic. And usually what I've imagined is different than what shows up on the page, and seeing that those differences and how it's almost like a learning experience where you wrote the test, you imagine the comic in your own head and submitted your answers, and then you can see what the answer key looks like. Like, oh, that's what he did there. That's so much better than what I was thinking of. And it's similar with Adventure Time, but there it's your own work, and so it's not as challenging or surprising or anything, because you kind of have the answer key in a sense. You've written it. It's weird and part of you, but someone else's work in that same process is a lot of fun. And I enjoy fun. This makes it seem like everything I read is for some educational purpose, but I feel like for most people when they read something, even if it's fiction or just like disposable fiction, you normally get something from it. You learn something, or you encountered a new idea or found some interesting way to express an old idea. I feel like just being even a little aware of that process lets you, you know, think about things differently and keep them in your head when you do learn something interesting.
Is there any, when it comes to your writing, like, what do you feel like you're influenced by? I mean, there's got to be comedians or movies or something that you sit there and be like, this is the humor that really I kind of want to do in this series.
Yeah.
Or influences.
Probably, I mean, a lot of people my age would probably say Kurt Vonnegut is a big influence. But what I get from him is he's very funny, but also not afraid to be sad. But also uses the medium to the full extent. He'll have books where, you know, he'll throw in a little pencil sketch, usually very crude, like he's drawn himself, but that's the best way to tell a story, and he can use them to be really effective. And that sort of idea where it's not really postmodernism, but where you're aware of the medium and using it the best way you can, even if that means breaking some rules of tradition, I think that's something I'm, you know, number one fan of, and I try to do that myself. and that's been a big influence. And I feel like a lot of comedians my age also will point to Mitch Hedberg as being a comedian who is super influential and super funny, and he just gets on stage and tells jokes, which is really hard, because if you're telling a story, like most comedians, the style now is you tell, you know, about my mom, you should know this, blah, blah, blah. It's more of a narrative about this person or the experience they've had. And there you've got, you know, 80 sentences to any one of them can be funny and you get your laugh. If you're just going on stage and saying, set up punchline, you've got to make sure every word in that little combo works. And it's great to see it done really well. And Mitch Hedberg did that almost nonstop. Really funny guy.
Is there any of the jokes that, like, you've done where you're like, yeah, this one absolutely hit it and knocked it out of the park?
I mean, I hope so, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, is there any that really stand out to you being like, you know, this is what I was been laughing my ass off when reading the comic, which made it really awkward at work. but is there any that to you is just being like, this is the humor that I really like? Or like how it was set up that it stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like any sort of the philosophy I subscribe to when you're writing is you don't want to put anything out that you're not happy with. And you don't want to put out a page and be like, all right, well, you know, this page isn't that great, but it's one page out of 20, don't worry about it. Because that sort of lowers the quality of the whole thing, and you're kind of betraying your audience a little bit, where your audience expects you to do the best work you can, and if you're just putting in half effort in one page because it doesn't really matter, that shows up, and I think people notice that. But if the question is, what's your best joke that you've had so far? I can't really think of it. I do really like BMO, and I like when BMO's cute, which happens all the time with him because he's this adorable robot. He or she's an adorable robot. So I like writing BMO gags, but I don't know if they're better than the other gags. I just know I really enjoy them when they hit. I love BMO.
BMO has Marceline's dad's face on him as a computer virus right now. So I'm really concerned about BMO's mortal peril at this moment.
he's
got some virus action. I have a question actually from one of our followers on Twitter. Snapflyer wants us to ask. Ryan was talking about the universe having consequences drawing. So I am wondering how he deals with developing relationships in such a way that they move forward in the comic but don't undercut their portrayal in the show.
That's a good question. That's done mainly by talking to the people on the show. So that example from issue 4 with Marceline, I wanted to show a bit of where this character started and move it forward a bit, but to do that I had to make sure that I wasn't going to contradict anything on the show. And so basically I have the idea, I say, can we do this? And they'll be like, we can, or that's going to contradict something 2 years down the road, but tweak it a bit. So it's that sort of thing. Now that's for major things like origin stuff, but for other stuff where it's just relationships developing as they do when you go on adventures together, normally that's pretty easy to develop it, because it's like if you're friends with someone for 10, 15 years, you don't hang out with them every day and talk about the way you developed as a friend 8 years ago. You know, you just accept it, and when it comes up, it comes up. And so if I develop something in the comic that tweaks a relationship a bit, but the show doesn't have it, it doesn't really make a difference because it probably doesn't show up in the natural course of events that often. I haven't yet had something that's been directly contradicted by the show, which is great, because everything's happy. I'm happy. But it's nice that relationships are such that you can have them develop, and, you know, it's very easy to reconcile cartoon Finn and comic book Finn and not have any contradictions that ruin it for you, because that's what I'd like to avoid, best case.
And we actually have another question from Twitter. So the show has often episodes that barely feature Finn and Jake. Do you plan on doing any stories in that sort of mind where they're sans the boys?
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about it. The trick is that if I can't really do, Well, yeah, I shouldn't say can't. It's difficult to do a four-issue arc without Finn and Jake because that's 4 months of real time with the comic that says Adventure Time on the cover, Adventure Time with Finn and Jake on the cover, and Finn and Jake don't show up in the comic at all. But the nice thing about the comic is that it's structured so that I'm writing this on-model continuing story every month, and there's a backup story done by an indie cartoonist, usually, who's doing their own style and their own type of story, and most of those don't have Finn and Jake in them. And I find there's two benefits to that. One is I don't have to carry the whole issue myself, which is always nice, but also it lets you explore different parts of Ooh and different characters, and you get that sort of let's not talk about Finn and Jake all the time, it's scratched with those backup stories. So I've been thinking about doing telling part of a story where Finn and Jake disappear or go somewhere else, but I haven't done it yet.
As far as those backups, it's something that I've talked about, that we really like it in that it's different styles, different voices. How much are you involved in those, or is it something where, you know, it just kind of someone else is totally taking care of it and you're not involved at all?
Yeah, Boom handles that. So when I get the issues, I get to read the backup and, like anyone else, be surprised at what happened. Which I really enjoy because the comic has a surprise for me, too. I get to feel like a reader of the comic. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because some of them do seem like they're commentary on the main story. So they're reacting in some ways to the things and
yeah.
The things that are going out there.
Yeah, that's totally my editor's doing all that. They get the credit for that. I just show up and read the comic.
Do you know if they're doing that? Like, they actually tell the people to say, like, hey, in this backup, can you do a little commentary about this? Because I did notice that some of them were very tied in, and I was wondering how much the editor, like, works
out.
Yeah,
I know. I'm not sure if to what degree, but I think it's pretty evident that it is happening, right? There's a time travel arc, and then there's comics about time travel. They fit together really nicely. Probably not an accident.
Yeah, I mean, with that time travel one, I mean, it kind of goes back to, I think, of how intelligently it's all written, in that the backup kept referencing these very adult people, you know, Vonnegut and various writers, and it's just like, you know, average kids isn't going to get that, it's wonderful that the series is willing to do all of it, you know, adult stuff, kid stuff, mixed.
Yeah.
It's something you rarely see in comics today. It's everything's very adult or kids, and to get something that both can enjoy is such a rarity.
Yeah, but the nice thing about that is also it wasn't exclusionary. Like, when they're talking about this theory done by this author, they're saying this author wrote this, but then they're telling you what the theory is. So if you've never heard of the author or read any other book about Adventure Time, you can still follow the story and, you know, not be left on the ground floor. Which I think is a neat trick, right? You don't want to exclude your audience because they haven't read the same books you have. But if you can bring them along with you, while also, you know, referencing those books to people who have read them, you've pulled it off nicely.
Yeah, I mean, that was the kind of the thing that was fun was reading it was, you know, I understood a lot of the references. Some of them I didn't, but at the same time, like, each page unto itself, it basically explained it. And then the kind of joke at the bottom was, sorry, so-and-so, which I thought was just really, really intelligent. It also kind of played off of your use of the bottom of the pages, which was great to kind of see it used in the backup stories as well.
Yeah,
it really tied it off.
They're good. I like them.
I mean, do you see those before... do you see those stories before they're printed, or is it really like when the comic is first printed, you get in your hand, like that's the first time you see those backup stories?
That's absolutely it. I have the comic in my hand, I open up, and I get to read the stories.
So I actually have got someone on Twitter. It says, can you do the LSP voice?
Oh,
I can't. It's a secret voice. I don't even do it for my wife. It's just me. It's a private time.
That's totally respectable.
Sorry, Hansel.
I'm taking Hansel, or no?
I just thought it through.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, is there things that you can hint at that's coming down? You said you scripted things out to 16, and so 13 was out last week. Any hints as to what's coming up?
Issue 15 is going to be standalone, and it's going to be doing something that we haven't done before in the comics at all. So something brand new and crazy, and I think people like it.
Interesting. Now I'm not even a hint.
It involves Magic Man. That's all I'll say.
Magic Man. That's
he's such a jerk.
Oh my god,
he's the biggest jerk in the show.
Oh god. This might have just been something only I noticed, but one of the characters who, I think it was Trish or whatever, who was the limb, one of the limbs from the Magic Man episode, her costume is the exact same costume as this character from this Italian exploitation film that I saw. I'm not even kidding. And I was like, she's got the same eye patch as the woman from Thriller, A Cruel Picture. But that couldn't possibly be the same thing because that's crazy coincidence. But I just put it out there. I know you didn't work on that, but you did make me remember that bizarre coincidence I spotted there. I'm wondering if that might be the Easter egg, but I doubt it, because she's only two now.
That is pretty nuts.
Is there, you know, I'm sure you've got to get this question every once in a while. Like, is there a favorite episode that you've had or a favorite character of yours?
Favorite character, I think, is BMO. I really, really like BMO. This fantasy of a computer that can be your best friend, I think, is really appealing to me for a lot of probably very interesting reasons about my psyche. Favorite episode? I don't know. There's a lot of really good ones. I like the ones where Finn and Jake have fun with each other, but that doesn't really narrow it down much. There was actually, speaking of the one where Finn and Jake don't appear, there was the one last season where it was basically about this ice monster and a fire creature and the relationship. And Finn and Jake were in the background once or twice. That was gorgeous. And one of the things I do when I watch the show, sort of like a fun thing for fun writing thing, is try to imagine telling the story in comics. Like, if I was doing this comic, how would this be laid out? And there's some episodes that don't work because they're doing things that can only be told in animation, and that's terrific. And that story was really sweet, and it made me wish that I thought of it for a comic, because it would have been a really nice comic. But it was a really, really, really nice episode. So I'm glad they did
it. Oh, I cried when I watched it. I absolutely cried. But you're right. That's a fantastic exercise for creators, I think, like to try to translate it into their own medium. Yeah.
Well, then you see, like, oh, this is hard. Why is this hard? Oh, because it doesn't work well with me. Like, you can learn how mediums work by doing that, I think. And also, it's just fun to translate things in your head.
So other than Adventure Time, so you got Dinosaur Comics as well. Is there any other thing that you're working on or could be coming up?
Yeah, I wrote a non-linear second-person version of Hamlet called To Be or Not to Be that should be out in May if I get all the art in on time and all the other book stuff's done, which will be a lot of fun. And I'm actually doing a Galaga comic for a company called Shifty Look.
Yes.
Where I got to write the backstory for Galaga, which is a lot of fun.
Wow.
I totally forgot about that. I'm a huge Galaga fan, and when I first saw that announced, I was like, oh, that's going to be fantastic. We could probably do an entire show just on Galaga. I'm obsessed. There's a long story of me actually, like, basically stealing a Galaga machine, but that's it for another day.
That sounds like a good one.
I love that game. So cool. So if people want to, you know, follow you, get a hold of you, you know, you throw out the plugs of the social networks where people keep in touch.
Oh, gosh. Twitter is the best network, objectively. And I am Ryan Q North on Twitter. And, let's stick with Twitter. I love Twitter. Twitter's awesome. All my Twitter bros, Ryan Q North.
Cool. And, of course, there's Dinosaur Comics. Yes. So yeah, I mean, I appreciate you coming on. It's been great talking to you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. You so much.
And try to stay warm in Toronto.
I will do my best.
I love Toronto. I go, used to go to Fan Expo all the time, and actually grew up in Buffalo, so.
You know what it's like.
Oh yeah, love that city. Great comic shops.
Yes. Yes.
Thanks. I really appreciate you for coming on.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Thanks.
Bye.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
And, yep, okay. I was a little afraid of clicking him off and putting him on because I was like, I think he's that number. I'm not positive. And I don't want to drop you. So yeah, that was a great combo. You know, we've talked about Adventure Time a hell of a lot, and I'm now very happy that I've gone through and read the 13 issues that are out.
Good. And you started to watch the cartoon now?
I have, yes. I've catched a couple episodes. I'm going to see, still on a mission to see if I can go all the way back to the beginning and watch it straight.
Because it's the pilot is not like really contingent on anything else. But when I was going over making my list of what episode was the first episode someone should watch, the first episode actually is a perfectly good first episode for folks to watch. Absolutely, without a doubt. So
cool.
But yeah, I'm so excited and glad he was able to do the show with us. We want to hit on anything comics related from this week. There was something that just hit me today that was just, oh, do we want to talk about Damian Wayne?
We can.
I just heard the same name, Blog Talk Radio. Just, oh, our show is being broadcast from my computer. Let me turn it off. Okay.
I was about to say, I think I heard that in the background.
We can
talk about that. It's at this point spoiled, so. It's kind of a fascinating thing. So the comic world woke up to this morning. We all knew something was going on with Batman Incorporated number 8. DC was making calls to stores and saying you really probably should up your order. So clearly something was up. And it came out this morning in the New York Post, which I actually thought was a really interesting choice of newspapers to do it with, that they are bumping off Damian Wayne. The latest Robin is going to bite it with Batman Incorporated number 8, which comes out this Wednesday. I probably should start off and then like spoiler, but well, too late. And that kind of, you know, set the comic world on fire this morning. It's been interesting in that Grant Morrison kind of went on, you know, talked about it and said this was kind of in the planning, that really the Batman story, you know, up to this point since he started was really Damian's story, and that you've got this character in Batman who is immortal in a way, and how do you live up to that, which I thought was a very interesting spin on it.
I do think it sort of harkens back to one of the bad tendencies comics have of not letting any characters have children or age or become more adult. I since it is the creator of Damian Wayne, really, who's writing it, it's not as bad. And I have to wonder if partially he's killing him because he doesn't want someone else to run off and do horrible things with the character because, you know, can't necessarily be trusted. But it makes me sad. I think it's a loss. And
it's, you know, it's funny is when the character, and I think a lot of people will say this, is when the character first started, he was beyond irritating, and I hated him.
Yeah.
But he's been given a lot of depth and really fleshed out and done wonderful things in Batman and Batman and Robin and Batman Incorporated. They've really built out this character, which has been fantastic.
I'm wondering, actually, not that I think about it, I'm wondering, maybe he doesn't die. Maybe something else happens. Maybe he dies as being Robin, as in, like, he goes back to, like, being with Talia or something. Maybe they're trying to spin it that way.
Well, so what I have, I don't know. I haven't read it yet. Who knows if I'm getting a review copy. I'll definitely pick up a copy just because I'm kind of fascinated by it. The story generally, which came out, was he dies at the hands of a older clone. Because Damian himself is a clone. I think. So there's like an older version of him that he winds up fighting and gets killed and becomes the hero. So he goes out in a blaze of glory, which is, in a way, the only way that he could become immortal and really live up to his father's legacy. And Morrison promised in what he's written up was, like, it's very fitting and a good way for him to go out. So, I don't know. The only thing that worries me is that, you know, you had Jason Todd in the infamous story of Death in the Family, mid-80s, where the character was so disliked that DC actually had a phone number where fans could choose if Jason Todd lived and died, and overwhelmingly people said kill him. And it was 20, 30 years, and they brought Jason Todd back, which makes me wonder, like, how permanent is this going to be?
Nothing's ever really permanent, although... Interesting. Like, I, you know, reading back on the history, I didn't realize how much of the fan hatred of Jason Todd seemed like it was kind of oddly classist in some strange ways, and sometimes got stated in very homophobic ways as well, which then makes, of course, the fact that the character is so loathsome now that he's back, like, really kind of more messed up. It's like, I wanted to defend you because people who hated you were being assholes, but now you sound just like one of those people. I have complicated thoughts about that character.
Yeah, I mean, it's one, it's kind of hard always to be the second of anything, and he, you know, Dick Grayson was so loved. There's nothing that Jason Todd could have done to live up to that legacy as far as characters, which is kind of ironic with the same issue that kind of Damian's having in the actual story. So it almost seems like Morrison is trying to be cute and smart and comment on Jason Todd's role as Robin through commentary of Damon and getting all sort of meta, but I don't know if that's on purpose or really reading into stuff. And Morrison's crazy like that. He could possibly.
So I guess that's we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, it hit shops Wednesday. I think it's going to be the issue everyone's talking about. I'm going to be fascinated to see if it has the runs like so many other comics that have come out, you know, Death of Spider-Man, Fantastic for Death of Human Torch, Captain America, some of the recent ones in the last, whatever, number of years. And we'll see how long they keep it up, but they said that it's something that's not just going to be in Batman Inc., that it will play out throughout the other series. But yeah, so two more days, we get to find out.
Yeah.
I think anything else? It's, other than that, it's been pretty quiet in the comics world for the last couple of weeks, other than the Orson Scott card, but I don't think we can give that time right now to do it justice.
No. Yeah, no, I guess we're good for this week.
Cool. Well, I just want to say thanks again for Ryan North for joining us. It's been awesome to talk Adventure Time.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Thank you, guys. And thanks to everyone who sent us questions.
Yes, everyone. Thank you, Hansel and Snappalier. Who knows if I pronounced that right.
I forgive you.
Rachel, I think the name is. Rachel from Michigan. So, everyone, thank you for listening. Again, Ryan North, Adventure Time, you can get it from Boom Studios, Kaboom. It's a great series. 13th issue just came out last week. And everyone, I guess, to quote Adventure Time, this episode has been mathematical.
Indeed.
Yes. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.